I'm Kevin Kelly. The show's live and local, and we're back after a couple of weeks' hiatus. Our guests today are all members of the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana. They are presenting Eugène Ionesco's play called Rhinoceros. Eric Burton is the director. He's with us, and he's brought three of his cast members to do one short scene and talk about the show. And we'll have some music in the later portion of the program, not necessarily directed toward any special events. It's live and local on FM 90.9. Hope you'll stay with us. Those are the Romanian folk dances of Béla Bartók in a performance by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra led by Sir George Schulte. Here on FM 90.9, this is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and thought we'd lead with some Romanian music for the Romanian slash French, or maybe it goes the other way around, playwright. Hoping I'm saying his name right, Eugène Ionesco, or Eugene Ionesco, or how do you guys usually say it? Ionesco.
Pronunciation is correct.
Ionesco, okay. Well, you know, us classical announcers, or almost ex-classical announcers, now that I'm actually doing a quote-unquote talk show, have to sort of analyze these things. But in any event, his play called Rhinoceros is opening at the Station Theater in Urbana, put on by the Celebration Company there. It opens on Thursday and runs through the 30th of January. And I have to tell you that, well, let me say that we have their director, Eric Burton, on with us, and then three of the cast members who we'll introduce as they come as in their roles. But I have to tell you, I haven't read anything by Ionesco, so I've just read a little bit about him. So this, if I'm able to go to this show, this will be my own exposure to this playwright. I understand it's one of his better-known plays. Mm-hmm. So let's assume there are others like me out there. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this playwright?
Well, Ionesco is a part of the absurdism movement, which really began after the Second World War. And it drew from Dadaism and Surrealism and this idea that the world was essentially random and there was no meaning to anything, a lot of existentialism thrown in there, and that things were... there was nothing sacred, and you can make fun of everything, and it was just a big, silly game that we were caught up in. And so there is a very interesting progression through all the absurdist authors as they sought meaning in their own lives and in their own artwork and tried to create meaning for themselves, I suppose. And Rhinoceros is Ionesco's tongue-in-cheek jab at the fascism that was going on in Europe in the first half of the 20th century, and the mind of the mob as people took up arms with very totalitarian regimes and failed to speak out or fight against things they obviously knew were wrong. And so that's kind of where this play started. Yet having said that, above all, it's a very comedic, silly piece. And I don't know if any of you guys have anything to add to that ramble. But
Who would be some of the other playwrights that might be in that same absurdist, and also, I guess, contemporary of his?
Well, Beckett is the, the top of the ladder. And then there's also I can never say his name right. Sartre.
Oh, I don't feel too bad now.
Yeah. Oh, I'm horrible with pronunciations. And then Pinter was another big one. And I'm blanking right now. John.
The balcony.
Genet. Right. The show I directed last time there was Genet. And many, many other lesser authors. It was quite a large movement in Europe and also in the States. But.
So what differentiates him from, say, Samuel Beckett? The only reason I ask that is because of the folks you just mentioned. He's the only one one of whose plays I happen to have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Walked out on.
Ionesco, for the most part, tends to be a lot more lighthearted. I guess when your life has no meaning, you can take two different attitudes of it. One is, meh, it's all good, and I'm going to have a fun time. And the other one is, my life is misery then. And he, at least very much for the first part of his career, was very funny and silly in his plays and did a lot of jokes and picked up much more from the Dadaism artistic movements, I think.
And where does this fall in his chronology? Early, middle, late?
This play is pretty mid to late.
Middle to late.
Yeah. It was written in 57.
So not as silly as some of the other ones.
It's pretty silly, actually. I was saying before the show started that his final piece, which is Exit the King, which he wrote in the 70s, I believe, was a very, very dark play. So he did transcend into that as he began to consider his own mortality. But for the most part, his plays are quite fun, I would think. John was in The Chairs, which I'm not super familiar with. I don't know if you can speak to that.
About 7 or 8 years ago, we did The Chairs, and I was a deaf mute, so I had to learn sign language. So this is the first time I actually get to say words by Ionesco, but it was strange.
And so. John is John Chandler. Mm-hmm. And what is the role you are playing in Rhinoceros?
Well, in Act One, Scene One, I'm an old gentleman, and then I take 20 years off and I become a gentleman called Botard in Act One, Scene Two.
I bet you would like to do that in real life. How do you manage it on stage? Maybe you can duplicate this.
Smoke and mirrors. I don't know.
Yeah, I put it up to artistic talent, personally. But.
Yeah. A little bit of costume change, things like that. So.
And tell us something about those characters. What's their significance?
Well, the old gentleman is sort of a throwback to the. He's kept the, this was being somewhat French in France, a lot of the old values, and he's very polite. He likes to help everybody. And then Botard is a blowhard. He's very insecure about his own backgrounds and intelligence, so he just attacks everybody. And he tries to...
It's a familiar figure, actually.
And
not referring to you.
How do I respond to that?
No, I'm just thinking of any number of people.
And he's very insecure about his lack of education. He's in a group of a lot of educated people, so he sort of poo-poos a lot of things that they hold dear. And so I get to say a lot of interesting things about universities. So.
Oh, okay. And here we are. Here we are in a university setting. But do we localize any of this play?
No, it's set in France in the past is kind of the setting we gave it. We've loosely given it a setting of the 70s as opposed to the late 50s, just to kind of help with the humor. And if you see the play, you'll get it. But it's and we have slightly Americanized. I mean, we're not doing accents or anything, and the costumes are kind of Americanized and things. But it's set in France.
So not set at the University of Illinois.
Not set at the University of Illinois.
2010. Yeah. What do we call this new decade now? The tens? The teens?
I guess the teens.
Not the aughts. What I never understood that. Well, before we introduce the other two folks, let me reintroduce our directors, Eric Burton, and their topic, which is Eugene Ionesco's play Rhinoceros, which is opening Thursday at the Station Theater in Urbana, the Celebration Company there performing it. It's a sort of a larger cast than many of the station plays that I've seen. Looks like about 12, 14 people in the cast.
I think we have 11 plus a cat.
A plus a cat. Now, I can imagine dogs. I mean, dogs have been in plays because you can actually train them to do stuff. Does this cat have to do anything?
This cat is held. We discovered last night that it does have to keep still. That we had our first tech rehearsal last night, and we had some interesting noises going on, and... all I can say is hopefully it will be working by opening night.
All right. And did you cast the cat? I mean, did you have an audition for the cat?
We did not audition for it, but we had a couple of cats that we discussed and picked the mellowest of the cats we could find.
Probably a good lab cat who would just snooze.
Yeah, was the idea. And he's definitely awake and alert, but he's actually a quite calm cat.
My cats would not.
Neither would mine.
No.
This cat is supplied by our assistant director, Nicole Powers.
And what is the cat's name?
His name is Buddy.
And what is the name of the cat's role?
He has no name to his role. He's just a cat. He was trained through, I believe, 5 years of a young child carrying him around. So that is why he is so mellow.
Yeah, which could do either of two things to you, I imagine. I'm glad he went that way. Tell us about Rhinoceros.
So this is a small French village. Our leading character, Beringer, is meeting his best friend, Jean, for coffee one Sunday afternoon. And Jean is scolding Beringer for his poor hygiene habits and his lack of care for himself or the world around him. And Beringer blames it on alcohol and his lack of reason to live or to try to do anything. And their conversation is interrupted by a rhinoceros running past.
Logically enough.
Logically enough. And the whole town square erupts and people popping out of windows and things, trying to figure out what this is running by. And that basically starts the wheels rolling for the rest of our story, which is the gradual transformation of all the people in the town into rhinoceroses and Beringer's, what's the right word, insistence on not becoming one himself. And so there's some interesting parallels between willpower and individual mind versus the mob mentality is everybody turns into rhinoceroses, but also Beringer not being able to not drink as a budding alcoholic, yet thinking he can prevent himself from becoming an animal, which appears to be a pretty involuntary act as the play goes by. And so I don't know how confusing that sounded.
Well, I mean, it sounds absurd, which is the part of the point.
Yeah,
exactly. Rhinoceritis, is that a term that actually gets used in here?
Yes, it is used. We also have rhinocerotic, rhinoceroses.
We even created one for the show, the rhinocerocalypse.
Rhinocerocalypse.
And since we just introduced a new voice, it's time for you to be introduced, Rob. Rob Zaleski is in the role of Dudard.
Dudard, and I also play another smaller character in the beginning of the show as well.
So tell us about those folks.
Both of my characters actually turn out to be kind of a foil of the characters that John is playing, whereas his first old gentleman is kind of the old values and, you know, respecting other people. I play a cafe proprietor in the beginning who is very misogynistic, rude to everyone, just kind of pushes his weight around and tries to boss everyone that's in the town square around. And he's a jerk, and I'm kind of having a lot of fun with him because that's the very opposite of the way I am.
Is that true? I'm going to ask other people, is that true?
Yeah. No, trying to be a nice guy. And then my second character is Dudard, and that's I have that character for 2 acts of the show. And he is the educated, very respectful. He actually is pretty good friends with the lead character, Beringer. And he's the only one who really hasn't written him off, as opposed to everyone around him who's kind of, you know, tossed him aside as, you know, being unkempt and a drunkard. And I'm one of the last people that still tries to cling to him and help him better himself and not, you know, give up on him. And it's a good character. We've got a little love triangle thing going on that causes some tension between the characters. And it's a fun character to play, and I like having the dynamic of the two very, very different characters.
I really, in general, enjoy casting ensemble casts because it gives actors the opportunity to change roles on stage. And from a maintenance standpoint, it's much easier to work with a smaller group of people. But it's always really, really interesting, I think, to see people leave a stage and take 2 minutes to change a costume and come back on as somebody entirely else. And I think it makes for a very vibrant theater experience. So.
Is that essentially what that term ensemble cast means?
Now that you call me on it, I'm not sure, but I believe so.
Because I've seen that before, and I guess I've usually just had a picture. It's a small cast.
Ensemble casts are usually a group of people who play a variety of roles, as far as I know, similar to a Greek chorus, but a little more developed in modern theater to actually take on specific roles.
And we have one person with us who we have yet to introduce, so I might as well do it now, Catherine Lamb, in the role of Daisy. How did the name of Daisy get in here with all of these other French names?
I have no idea. I'm very curious if that's the same name that's in the French original. Obviously, this is going to be in translation. So, but a lot of the names have obviously been kept, and there's a Mr. and Mrs. Boeuf, which is Mr. and Mrs. Beef. So I don't know. I think there probably was something different, or oddly enough, they might have used an English name. I'm not sure.
And do you have another character or?
No, well? I just play Daisy. I'm there with the old gentleman and the proprietor in the beginning, and so yeah, there's just me playing Daisy.
And so, who is Daisy?
Daisy, I guess you could say, is Beringer's love interest. She's the third part of the triangle.
You know, I was going to ask that earlier. If you, mm-hmm. if we happen to have the other triangle member in here, and there you are.
Yes, exactly. And so she works in the office with Beringer and Dudard, and I think that's kind of the fuel for the love triangle. And she's the only woman in the office, and so I think that's also an interesting dynamic because she kind of stands for all of femininity and womanhood in that world, and she kind of becomes somewhat stereotypical fulfilling that role, and whereas there can be a variety of male types in the office. She kind of stands for her whole gender, just her by herself. So, and I think that poses some kind of conflict for her because that's part of why she is caught between Dudard and Beringer and how to kind of fulfill maybe what society expects of her. She's very conscious of her role in society and what's expected of her, I think.
And do you and others probably get caught between the notion, between becoming a rhinoceros or not becoming
mm-hmm.
one?
Because mm-hmm.
it seems to be there's a choice from what I read earlier, and you can actually kind of decide I'm going to or not going to.
There's a difference in interpretation. The way the play is written, it's assumed that there's a choice. Yet in discussions I've had with different cast members, I've yet to really see any evidence that from a character that turns into a rhinoceros that there is a specific choice. And so I left it up as a specific choice to each actor to decide if their character was choosing to become a rhinoceros or if it was just an involuntary act.
So this is a double choice going on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I believe it can be, there's insight in either avenue, I believe.
We're talking to Eric Burton, who is director of the Celebration Company's production at the Station Theater in Urbana of Eugene Ionesco's Rhinoceros, which opens on the 14th of January. Continues through the 30th. All shows are at 8 o'clock, as they always are at the Station Theater. It's about the only theater I know in town where you never have to question what time the show's done, because it's always at 8 o'clock. And if you want more information,
please call 384-4000 or go to our website, which is www.stationtheater.com.
And that is theater spelled with an R-E. It seems to be the way things are done in America these days. Mm-hmm. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. And since you brought some people along, Eric, to actually do a short scene, I know you said that finding the right people who happen to be available during the mm-hmm. noon hour to actually be able to do a scene was a bit of a challenge.
It was quite a challenge. This is a very, what's the right word, fast-paced and busy play. And so finding one point where we had only three people speaking was quite the challenge, and even so, we assembled a scene here. This is a few different portions put together.
Yes, I see it fits on one yes. piece of paper.
So, but yeah. We'll
so who would you like to introduce this
yes,
particular
sorry.
Scene then?
So John will be playing Botard.
And it's John Chandler.
Mm-hmm. And Rob Zaleski will be playing Dudard. And Catherine Lamb will be playing Daisy. And this is a short scene from the beginning of the office scene in the first act.
Okay.
Act one, scene two.
Act one, scene two.
It's all a lot of made-up nonsense.
But I saw it. I saw the rhinoceros.
It's in the paper, in black and white. You can't deny that. It's all here. It's down here in the dead cats column.
I never believed journalists. They're all liars. I don't need them to tell me what to think. I believe what I see with my own eyes. Speaking as a former teacher, I like things to be precise, scientifically valid. I've got a methodical mind.
What's a methodical mind got to do with it?
I think it's stated very precisely, Mr. Botard.
You call that precise? And what, pray, does it mean by a pachyderm? And what does the editor of a dead cat's column understand by a pachyderm? He doesn't say. And what does he mean by a cat?
Everyone knows what a cat is.
It's all a hoax.
What's all a hoax?
Your rhinoceros business, of course. You've been making all this propaganda to get those rumors started.
What propaganda?
Do I have to tell you again? I saw it. I actually saw it. And others did, too.
You make me laugh. Propaganda? Propaganda for what?
Oh, you know more about that than I do. Don't make your out that you're so innocent.
Oh, at any rate, Mr. Botard, I'm not in the pay of any furtive underground organizations.
That's an insult. I'm not standing
no,
for that.
No, Mr. Dudard.
I tell you, it's an insult.
Well, I'm encouraged already because I told you that I'd seen a Beckett play many years ago at the Goodman Theater in Chicago, and it was called Happy Days. I had read one other, at least I started to read it on my sister's recommendation, very strong recommendation, and we was waiting for Godot. I didn't get through that either.
It's a hard read.
And so Happy Days, all I remember about it was there was these two guys buried up to their necks, and they just talked nonsense. This was my, you know, my perception of it. They just talked nonsense at each other for, well, I don't know how long it went on because I left.
4 or 5 hours at least. Sure.
I actually remember it was one of the most hilarious intermission, starts to an intermission, and I felt that I wasn't obviously the only one because there was some guy right in front of me. I mean, the people I was sitting with, we were all sort of fidgety, but the guy right in front of me, as soon as the first act finished, he stood up and said, "Thank God." And out the door he went.
Oh, wow.
And we followed. But I followed that, so this one right here. So I'm encouraged that that this might be something I'd enjoy.
Theater's a funny business because there's a desire of everybody involved to make art and make a statement and share an idea in some way, but you are also responsible for entertaining a group of people who, for the most part, have come out to be entertained and not necessarily to receive a statement or your ideas. And so there's an interesting balance that has to be struck between you expressing yourself and your ideas as an artist, but also providing an enjoyable and understandable experience to your audience, I think. And
well, just in that scene you just read, I mean, there were any number of terms and questions that you could just take at face value and it's kind of silly, or you can not. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes something altogether different, like, mm-hmm. what is a cat?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
What do you mean
that
by propaganda? Yeah, well, that was the real cat. This is, you know, conceptual cat, or is it a real cat?
Mm-hmm.
And so on. And the whole idea of propaganda.
And that means a lot of things to a lot of different people. There's good propaganda, bad propaganda. So people could be thinking by the end of the night.
I'd like it if they were.
What's your experience, you guys who are actually in the play? How many? Well, John, you said you've done another Ionesco play before.
Right.
Have either of the others, Rob or Catherine?
No, I was actually a little nervous when I first heard about it that it was an absurdist play because I was really interested in working with Eric. We have mutual friends, and I've met him through other people, and I was, you know, really interested in trying to get into that show, but then I heard that it was an absurdist play, and I was a little nervous that it, you know, it was going to be one of those things that, you know, maybe I just wouldn't get.
Am I going to be buried in sand?
Right. But then once I auditioned and I got a chance to really read the script a little bit, I became really excited about it. And this is also my first station show, so I'm really excited to be part of the Celebration Theater.
So you're one of the new members of the Celebration
Company.
I'm
excited about that.
And Catherine, you've been in other?
I have not been in an absurdist or Ionesco play before, but I was familiar with Rhinoceros. And I think for me, it has these elements that are silly and completely off the wall, but I also think that there's a really followable and interesting plot to it. So it's, you know, of absurdist plays, probably not the most difficult one to kind of find characters you can relate to and things in it that can pull you in, and you're not constantly aware of the fact that you're watching something that doesn't entirely make sense. I think there's definitely a story to it.
And this one has, it's not really dated that the rhinoceros can be replaced by any sort of group in any point in time. Some other ones have all sorts of comments or references to things that happened at a particular time, and this is really devoid a lot of that. So you can say, so 80 people in the audience could have 80 different things they think is the rhinoceros, and that'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more universal. That's why it's a classic, I think, that it can be reformed by anybody and say, this is this group, this is this group. So
yeah, I think we very well could have set it at the U of I campus in 2010. mm-hmm. without having to make too many stretches, because it's that kind of piece. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we are, after all, sitting on that campus, so people can, you know, imagine that it's them, I suppose.
Hopefully a little, but...
As long as they don't take offense and start throwing things at us.
Well, the university is in a bit of a bad way right now, so it's probably not a good time to make fun of too many people, since everybody's got to go on furlough at some point, it seems, between now and May or June or something like that. I just got back from being away, and I'm not even sure what's going on here. I'll find out later. Well, I really appreciate your coming in on the program today, and wish you the best for a good production, and it sounds like just from even looking at your faces as you're talking about it and doing the roles that you have definitely in mind entertaining folks with this and not whacking anybody over the head with whatever subliminal points may be, maybe not so subliminal, it sounds like. What kind of, or maybe I shouldn't even ask this, what kind of mood is one likely to leave the play with?
Ooh, everybody looked at me for that.
Or should we leave that as a question to be unanswered?
I think it'll be a relatively lighthearted mood, but I think, I believe it was John was right, that there will be some thinking going on. We definitely end the play on kind of a down note, but it's pretty much funny right up until the end. And I think people will be highly entertained and ready to go out to a bar and have a drink or two or something like
and
that.
Talk about it.
And talk about it. Yeah.
Those are some of the best things. There was a movie years ago, I think it was called Memento.
Mm-hmm. I love that movie.
where things sort of happen backwards. The guy loses his memory. And I just remember standing in the parking lot. I think there were like three or four of us, and we were standing talking with three or four people we'd never met before forever and just talking about what had gone on there or maybe what hadn't gone on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, much like that movie, if someone comes and sees the play more than once, I think they will find things that they didn't notice the last time.
There's lots of extra content there.
Yeah, because there's so much going on with multiple characters at the same time that if they're focusing on one character, they may miss something over here, and if they see it again, they may catch what's over here. And, you know, all those different aspects will kind of round it out a little bit. So it actually is one of those things that would be worth seeing another time just to pick up some of the things you may have missed the first time around.
So you're really a plant of the marketing department.
Yes, I am.
go see it twice at least if you really want to get the full experience.
We want you to get a full understanding of it.
It's Eugene Ionesco's Rhinoceros at the Station Theater in Urbana, put on by the Celebration Company there. It opens on Thursday, the 14th, runs through the 30th. Doesn't run every day.
It runs Wednesdays through Sundays until the 30th.
All at 8 o'clock.
All at 8 o'clock.
Except and for more information, Wednesday. Except what?
Not this Wednesday.
Not this Wednesday. It opens on Thursday. Stationtheater.com is the web address. Phone number again?
384-4000.
And they don't take your money up front. You have to pay when you get there.
Just pay at the door. Make a reservation by phone.
The reservation is a good idea. And Eric Burton is the director, is with us on Live and Local, and three members of the cast, John Chandler, Rob Zaleski, and Catherine Lamb. And this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. It was a piece by a composer that I've really become rather fond of for some of his lighthearted and sometimes absurdist music, just in keeping with our earlier topic of Ionesco's plays. Jean Francais, who was actually rather contemporary, quite contemporary with Ionesco, now that it occurs to me, which was not intentional on my part. In fact, they were born just 3 years apart and died 3 years apart. Spanned almost all of the 20th century. Jean Francais died in 1997. And that was his divertissement, or entertainment, for bassoon and string quintet, members of the Gaudier Ensemble performing here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Tomorrow's program, we will learn more than a few things about organs and organ building. Jean-Paul Buzard of Buzard Organ, a pipe organ builders, based in Champaign, is going to be my guest on tomorrow's program during the noon hour. And I don't have the rest of the week lined up yet, but we're working on that since I've been gone for a couple weeks here. One item that's on my events calendar for this week, there are many more going on, but this is what I've got on my calendar so far. There's a dance for Parkinson's disease at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts Dance Rehearsal Room on Friday morning. So if you happen to have that time available, there is space for people on there. That's 10 o'clock on Friday, and I'll be getting more details on that as the week progresses and can tell you about it. Coming up next week, there are four performances in Urbana at the Krannert Center by the Moscow, three performances by the Krannert Center at the Krannert Center of the Moscow Festival Ballet. That's on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, all at 7 o'clock. They're also performing in Springfield next Sunday, the 17th, a Russian ballet gala at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield campus. That's Sunday afternoon, the 17th, at 3 o'clock. Other concerts coming up, the Illinois Chamber Orchestra is performing concerts on Friday and Saturday, the 22nd and 23rd. This Friday performance at St. Agnes Church in Springfield, the Saturday performance at Second Presbyterian Church in Bloomington. So those are just some of the classical-type concerts happening in our area coming up rather soon. Support for our broadcast today on FM 90.9 is provided by the Metropolitan Opera, continuing its series of live opera in high definition at neighborhood theaters. On Saturday, January 16th, the Met presents Georges Bizet's Carmen. More information is online at metopera.org. And I know in Champaign-Urbana, those presentations take place at the Savoy Theaters. And I don't know where else in our listening area they take place. You can find out, again, at that web address, metopera.org. And if you've never seen one of those productions, by the way, they are really stellar. The production quality is, production values are incredibly high, and it's also amazing to me that they actually do these things live and can pull them off as well as they do. They always have interviews with some of the stars mid-show, usually interview the conductor. Some famous opera singer or two is always the host. You get to see some of the stage movement going on, the stage scenery changing backstage, which, of course, if you actually go to the opera, you never get any indication of whatsoever. So it's they're really wonderful productions. I highly recommend them if you have a chance to go. We'll have a forecast for you coming up at 1 o'clock, news headlines at 1:01. Julie Almacher has classical music for you at 1:06. Here are a couple of performances from a disc called British Light Music Classics. The first is called The Grasshopper's Dance by Ernest Bucolosi, and the second one by Edward White is called The Runaway Rocking Horse. Both of these played by the New London Orchestra, led by Ronald Corp on FM 90.9. New London Orchestra, led by Ronald Corp, playing two of from their disc called British Light Music Classics, The Grasshopper's Dance by Ernest Bucolosi, and the second one was The Runaway Rocking Horse by Edward White. And in just a moment, a sample of their disc called European light music classics. It's live and local on FM 90.9. And on tomorrow's program, John Paul Buzard of Buzard Pipe Organ Builders in Champaign will join us. And our support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Music Shop and Pro Sound Center, now located at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign. The Music Shop specializes in the sales and rental of band and orchestra instruments, digital keyboards, guitars, amps, and drums, along with a wide variety of sheet music. If you missed today's show or any past show or miss part of any upcoming show, you can always find it on our website, which is will.illinois.edu. Just look for the live and local spot on the front page and go to that link, and you've got all the archived programs there. Some other concerts going on or performances going on in Champaign-Urbana anyway. Tonight at 6 o'clock, there's a jazz jam at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. On Wednesday, there's a session of Irish traditional music, as there is just about every Wednesday, at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign. That's at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. And also Wednesday at the Iron Post in Urbana, Woody Woodward's Piano Trio. That's at 5 o'clock Wednesday. It's the Parade of the Tin Soldiers by Leon Jessel.